Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namah Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Saraswata Deve Gauravani Prachadane Nirvashesha Shunyavani Pashachade Shatadane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 29, Verse 12. Sri Parikshit Uvacha Krishnam Vidu Param Kantam Natu Brahmataya Mune Guna Pravaho Paramas Tasam Gunadiyam Katam. Sri Parikshit Uvacha. Sri Parikshit said, Krishnam, O Lord Krishna, Vidu, they knew, Param, only, Kantam, as their beloved, Na, not, to, but, Abrahmataya, as the absolute truth, Mune, O sage Sukadev, Guna, one of the three modes of material nature. Pravaha, of the mighty current. Uparama, cessation. Tasam, for them. Gunadiyam, whose mentality was caught up in those modes. Katam, how? Translation, Sri Parikshit Maharaj said, O sage, the gopis knew Krishna only as their lover, not as the supreme absolute truth. How could these girls, their minds caught up in the waves of the modes of nature, free themselves from material attachment? Purport, King Parikshit was sitting in an assembly of great sages and other important personalities listening to the words of Sukadev Goswami. According to Srila Vishnu Chakravarti, as Sukadev began speaking to the gopis' conjugal love for Krishna, the king noticed the expressions on the faces of some of the more materialistic persons present there and realized the doubt lurking in their hearts. Therefore, although the king thoroughly knew the purport of Sukadeva's words, he presented himself as experiencing personal doubt so that he could eradicate the doubt of others. That is why he asked this question. Text 13, Sukadeva Goswami said, "This point was explained to you previously. Since even Shishupala, who hated Krishna, achieved perfection, then what to speak of the Lord's dear devotees?" Purport: although the spiritual nature of conditioned souls may be covered by illusion, Lord Krishna's spiritual nature is omnipotent and is never covered by any other power. In fact, all other powers are his energy, thus function according to his will. The Brahma Samhita says, "Srishti Srishti Pralaya Sadhana Shaktir Eka Chayeva Yasya Bhuvanani Vibharti Durga Ichanu Rupam Api Yasya Cha Chesate Sa." The mighty Durga, who creates, maintains, and annihilates material worlds, is the potency of the Supreme Lord, and she moves like his shadow according to his desire. Thus, because the Lord's spiritual influence does not depend on whether someone understands him or not, the gopis' spontaneous love for Krishna guaranteed their spiritual perfection. The great Madhvacharya quotes the following relevant passages from Skanda Purana: "Krishna kamas tada gopyas takva deham divam gata samyak krishnam parabrahma gyatva kalat param yayu." At that time, the gopis who desired Krishna gave up their bodies and went to the spiritual world. Because they properly understood Krishna to be the Supreme Absolute Truth, they transcended the influence of time. Purvam cha jnana samyuktas tatrapi praya sastata atastha sam param brahma gatir asinna kamata. In their previous lives, most of the gopis were already fully endowed with transcendental knowledge. It is because of this knowledge, not their lust, that they were able to attain the Supreme Brahman. Natu jnanam rite moksha nanya pateti hi sruti kama yukta tada bhaktir jnanam chato vimuktiga. The Vedas declare that without spiritual knowledge there is no valid path to liberation. Because these apparently lusty gopis possessed devotion and knowledge, they achieved liberation. Atomokshe pitasam cha kama bhaktyanu vartate mukti sabdatito chaidya prabhrito dvesha bhaginaha. Thus, even in their attainment of liberation, lust followed as a manifestation of their pure devotion. After all, what we call liberation was experienced even by envious persons like Shishupala. Bhakti margi pratanmuktim agad vishnu prasadataha kamas tvasubha kutchapi bhaktya vishnu prasadakrit. By the mercy of Lord Vishnu, one who follows the path of devotional service gains liberation as a byproduct, and such a person's lusty desire, which would normally invoke misfortune, instead evokes the mercy of Vishnu when exhibited in pure devotion. Adveshi jiva yutam chapi bhaktam Vishnu vimochayat ahoti karuna Vishnu shishupalasya mokshanat. Lord Vishnu will save even a devotee possessed of an envious life. Just see the extreme mercy of the Lord as shown by his granting liberation to Shishupala. Shishupala was Lord Krishna's cousin. He was mortified when the Lord stole the gorgeous young Rukmini, whom Shishupala himself was hell-bent on marrying. For various reasons also, Shishupala was consumed with envy of Lord Krishna, and finally insanely offended him in a great assembly called the Rajasuya sacrifice. At that time, Krishna nonchalantly cut off Shishupala's head and gave him liberation. Everyone present saw the effulgent soul of Shishupala rise out of his dead body and merge into the existence of the Lord. The seventh canto explains that Shishupala was an incarnation of a gatekeeper in the spiritual world, cursed to take birth on earth as a demon. Since even Shishupala was liberated by the Lord, who took into consideration the whole situation, then what to speak of the gopis, who loved Krishna more than anything. So, after this initial description of the gopis going to Krishna, without even a description of the full Rasa Lila, but simply that their love for Krishna was so strong that they broke all the conventions of society and respect for parents and husbands, etc., and ran off to Krishna. Just with this description, Parikshit begins to ask this question. How is it that these girls who didn't even know that Krishna was Supreme Lord, and of course Parikshit knows that Krishna is Supreme Lord, how could these women who didn't even know that and who seemed to be affected by material lust get his association? Because only a person who's free from material association can associate with the Lord. So how is this possible? And as explained in the purport, this is not Parikshit Maharaja's actual ignorance that is expressed here, but this is a question that a materialist would ask, assuming that the gopis actually had material love for Krishna and that their so-called kama was material lust. Now, of course, the devotees understand that the associates of the Lord don't have material lust or any type of attachment in that sense at all. So the Yasoda and Nanda have attachment to Krishna, but it's not the vatsalya of the material world, which is bondage. It's completely different. So similarly with the gopis, attachment is actually spiritual. But people who look at the Bhagavatam critically, I then think this is all material. And how can people with this kama approach the Supreme Lord who is beyond the gunas? How is it possible? Not possible at all. This, of course, can be taken in two ways. One, that Krishna's not God after all. Or that the whole story is fictional and this is only allegorical and the gopis don't really exist because kama cannot exist with the Supreme Lord at all. This is kind of a doubt which a materialist would raise. As is pointed out, Parikshit is speaking for others' benefit, not only the people in the assembly who were also listening, but and not just materialists as such, but also people who were attached to other Vedic practices like Karma Yoga, Karma Kanda, etc. They may be a little bit puzzled by this whole incident. How can someone break Dharma and be praised as being the highest devotee? How can that be? It's a puzzle for many people, because here the gopis run away from their houses and they leave their children and their parents and their husbands, etc. And people who are very strict in terms of Dharma, then they say this is sinful. So how can we praise that at all? And how would Krishna accept them even? So these are the questions that would be raised by people who are attached to karma. And the gyanis also would, of course, object to the whole thing, because I said this is not a very good example of becoming detached from everything and merging in Brahman. How could you have such desire, etc.? You have to control your senses completely to attain Brahman or mukti. So how is it possible that these personalities were able to associate with Krishna, who's supposed to be the Param Brahma? How is it possible? So, whether one is following Vedas or not following Vedas, many persons could criticize. This is the doubt which Parikshit raises, and then Sukadeva begins to answer in the following verses. Of course, this is not the only instance where we find questions asked like this not out of ignorance, but simply out of desire to teach people. We will find this throughout the Bhagavatam. The questions are asked in this manner when actually they know the answers. And of course, even in Bhagavad Gita, we find Arjuna asks questions to Krishna throughout the Bhagavad Gita, but actually he also is a Nitya Siddha devotee, so he doesn't have any doubt at all. But he asks questions that have, so that people in the material world can get some clarity on these issues. Here Sukadeva begins to reply by stating that in relation to Krishna, not in relation to Brahman, impersonal Brahman, but in relation to Krishna, particularly One can approach him in different ways and still get perfection. One can approach him even in hatred and get perfection, as we see in the case of Shishupal and Agasura and others. They were killed by the Lord and they got liberation. And that, of course, the Agasura story was told in the previous to this in the 12th or 13th chapter of Bhagavatam. Here we're in 29th chapter. So that was already explained that he killed a demon. Putana also, earlier than that, Putana also got liberation and she approached Krishna in hatred. This, of course, is a little bit special because it's not that the normal form of the Lord, like Vishnu or Rama, will give liberation, even impersonal liberation. It's Krishna who may give impersonal liberation or may give them a place in the spiritual world. So normally when the forms of Vishnu kill a demon, they do not go to a hellish existence. They get a good material existence. They may go to Svargaloka or enjoy like Ravana or Sishupala, who was killed by Ramchandra before as Ravana. He gets a nice enjoyment as Shishupala as a king. So that's to the extent they get some benefit from the Lord. But when Krishna kills them, then they get liberation. And that is why everyone was very astonished when Agasura was killed and his soul came out of his body and merged into Krishna. And then all the devatas were astonished when they saw this. How could he give liberation to such a person? This giving liberation even to the demons is something which is unique for Krishna, actually. Even the demons who hated Krishna got his association in one sense because they merged into him. They merged into his body and merged into Brahman, etc. If that's the case, anybody by the Lord's will could merge in the Lord. Of course, what it means is they become purified. It's not that they're in an impure state when they merge in the Lord and all the gunas also merge in the Lord. No, they're purified. So this is why Krishna is special and why they can merge into him, even those who are demons. Because through concentration on the Lord in hatred, they get purified. And why would they concentrate on Krishna? Because he's all attractive. Because of his beautiful form, they become completely attracted to him in hatred. And they think of him all the time because of his attractive form, even if it's hatred. And they chant his name in hatred because they cannot stop thinking about him. So because of that absorption, even in hatred, they get purified. And when they're completely purified, then they're qualified to merge in Brahman, merge in the Lord, etc. So it's not that they come in a contaminated state. They come purified. Or, in the case of someone like Putana, by the contact with the Lord, they become purified. And by his mercy. The demons, in other words, get some special advantage when they meet Krishna or get killed by him because they become purified. Krishna is very special in this regard that even the demons can approach him. This is not a characteristic of other forms of the Lord. What to speak of Gyanis and Karmis who are trying to approach the impersonal Brahman. Impersonal Brahman doesn't do anything. There's no personality at all to give mercy or be attractive or anything. So that's why it is so difficult for the Gyanis and the Yogis to get purified. Because they had to force their minds to give up all of these desires, etc. So, without effort, the demon, by his hatred, is purified. And then when Krishna kills him, he's liberated. Of course, this is not bhakti. So, this is a negative example given to show
how even the most contaminated person can attain the Lord in some form, merging in the Lord, by hatred or whatever. If the demons can attain the Lord in hatred, then what to speak of the devotees? Even if they're impure, they can attain the Lord. So of course, generally we do sadhana, and through the sadhana process, we become purified. In some cases, we get kripa-siddhi, mercy of the Lord. So without the sadhana, or without much sadhana, a person advances quickly to bhava or to prema. That's the mercy of the Lord for the devotee. So that is, of course, rare, as the case with putana, this mercy and then going to the spiritual world. So normally the devotee does sadhana, bhakti, and through that he becomes purified along with getting mercy of the Lord. So the bhakti itself is a type of mercy, and the Lord exerts his mercy on the devotee so that very quickly he becomes purified, and not only purified, but becomes completely attracted to the Lord. And then he's qualified to meet the Lord. So in that process, whatever material gunas and desires and anartas are there are dissipated by the attraction to the Lord, the process of bhakti. In that case, the devotee attains the Lord much quicker than jnanis attain liberation, because the process of bhakti is attractive to the Lord, and the Lord assists the devotee to annihilate the nartas and develop his attraction. And the added attraction is Krishna. As in the case of the demons, they absorb themselves in Krishna by hatred. So the devotees are also attracted to Krishna because he's all attractive, and they can develop very quick attraction favorably, with affection, because Krishna has attractive form, qualities, and pastimes. It was very easy in comparison to other forms of the Lord who do not show the same amount of pastimes, same amount of qualities, same beautiful form. So in that way, Krishna is also more advantageous to the devotees, not just the demons. Krishna also gives great advantage to the devotees, many opportunities to concentrate on him. So it becomes easy because he is all attractive. So those anartas all are dissipated. But we have affection for the Lord, which becomes prema. That becomes stronger and stronger and stronger until it's 100%. And it indicates complete attachment to the Supreme Lord, complete possessiveness of the Supreme Lord. So that is not material. It may look material, but it is not. And it takes different forms. One may be attached to Krishna as a parent, thinking of Krishna as one's child. That becomes Vatsalya Rasa. One may become attracted to Krishna as the lover, and that becomes Madhurya Rasa. Or become attached to Krishna as a friend, that becomes Sakya Rasa. So these are all attachments. But they're not bad attachments. They're not the attachments of the material world and the gunas at all. They're completely different. They arise through the process of bhakti, which is nirguna. And the stronger they become, the better they are, until one name is prema. Then they're considered excellent. And there is no material gunas at all at that stage. So this is difficult to understand for a person in the material world, because it looks similar. They're very attached. Why are they so attached? They're attached as parents, they're attached as lovers, etc. But Krishna is the object. And it's completely different. There is no desire of enjoyment for the self. It is all for Krishna. Material world, we contemn these attachments because we want things for ourselves. We do actions, we get karma, we get ignorance, we get suffering, we get bondage. By attachment to the Supreme Lord favorably, one destroys all the bondage and develops prema and bliss in the spiritual world. So, completely different. So we cannot criticize the attachment and possessiveness that the devotee has for the Lord. If he has attachment for material things, that is gunas, in the gunas, that is anartha. But if it's for the Lord and it's very, very strong, then it cannot be criticized. So therefore, the attachment of the gopis for Krishna, so strong that they forgot about Dharma and ran off to the forest, cannot be criticized, because the attachment is for Krishna and it's not material. It is spiritual. So we cannot apply the same rules of the material world to the spiritual world. Everything is in relation to Krishna and the spiritual world. In the material world, all the rules are not like that. Therefore, and the rules are meant to help people control their senses from enjoying materially. That's what all the rules of Dharma are for. If one has 100% attraction for Krishna, one doesn't need those rules of Dharma anymore. The purpose is already fulfilled. Senses are completely controlled because senses are only for pleasing Krishna. So no necessity of rules of Dharma, etc., etc., etc. All for Krishna. Spiritual world and the devotees in the spiritual world in relation to the Lord operate with completely different rules from those in the material world. And we cannot apply the same standards to them at all. Everything in relation to the Lord. However, we do have an appearance of Dharma in the spiritual world and in Krishna's pastimes when he comes to the material world. And of course, Krishna also preaches Dharma. And Bhagavad Gita, Mahabharata, etc. And we see preaching Dharma on one level. So he teaches that, definitely. And the people of even Vrindavan and Dwarka, they also follow Dharma. They generally follow the rules of Dharma. So it looks like they are also subject to the rules. No, they're not, but they do follow as a part of their pastime in their particular role. The Yadus in Dwarka are Kshatriyas, and they follow Kshatriya Dharma, and they follow all those rules as Kshatriyas. And here in Vrindavan, all the cowherds follow the Vaishya rules as part of their pastimes. It's Dharma within pastimes, there is no problem when the gopis break these rules. They cannot be criticized from the regular material Dharma point of view. There can be no criticism from that point of view. Now, within the pastimes, yes, they can be criticized. So the parents can criticize, why are you going out at night? And they stop them, etc. The husband stops them. From that point, within pastimes, they get criticized, but not from the point of view of attraction to Krishna. So later it's explained by even Sukadev Goswami that all of those persons, even the husbands and the parents, ultimately, they were all trying to please Krishna. And that all this happened. And they in no way develop hatred for Krishna through all these pastimes. So this is the arrangement made here. All this opposition, etc., is part of the pastimes. And what does it do? It's there to create some sort of obstacle for the gopis so that their love increases and becomes more intense. So ultimately, for their benefit, so they get more bliss. So later on, first Krishna discourages the gopis, and then he accepts them. And then later on, he disappears. And then they become further disturbed, and the intensity increases up to Mahabhava, etc. They become insane with out of their separation. And then Krishna appears again. And then they get angry. So why did you do that? Why did you do all this? And he says, it's for your benefit. And he said, one is to teach other people to show the intensity of your love. Otherwise, there's no way of understanding how intense your love is. And secondly, that that intensity is so strong that you forget everything else. Well, this is extraordinary. And, of course, the result is that they get extraordinary satisfaction and bliss from their relationship with Krishna. So everything ends in a very positive note with everyone being very satisfied and developing greater bliss. So therefore, the appearance of breaking rules, etc., and not controlling the senses is very superficial. But actually, the gopis are on the highest level. So there's those who do understand the nature of bhakti, etc., then they will never criticize any of the devotees up until the gopis for their attachment to Krishna and their so-called breaking of rules and dharma, etc. So in this way, Parikshit asks this question so that to clarify this doubt about that other people may have, the materialists, the karma yogis, and the jnani yogis may have about relationship with Krishna. So this is only possible because of Bhagavan and bhakti. Definitely following the process of jnana and getting liberation in jnana, one cannot use the same excuses and say, okay, we don't have to follow Dharma anymore because we're so much attracted to Brahman, etc. No, it's a completely different set of rules developed within Sattva Gun, and they have to follow Sattva Gun conduct, etc., and follow Dharma, and then after that, then they can start renouncing everything. And of course, there is no great object of attraction. Rather, they simply merge in Brahman. So here we have the object of attraction, Krishna, which causes them to forget everything else, including their parents, etc., in order to meet Krishna. So this is manifest in the form of Bhagavan, and particularly with Krishna. So we don't see this type of relationship in other forms. And of course, we don't even find other forms of Krishna in Dwarka. We do not find the same intensity of the love as we find here with the gopis, because they're all married to Krishna. So there's no sense of breaking any rules at all. But here, they break all the rules to meet Krishna. So their love is even higher. So not only one can approach Krishna with the so-called kama, or lust, which is actually madhurya rasa, not lust, but even if it is parakya, it is considered higher because it's more intense than the swakya rasa of the gopi, the queens in Dwarka. So it's even higher than their love. But in either case, one can approach the Lord with that kama, that is with madhurya rasa, and there is no material tinge in it at all.
But it's, I think in the Bhagavad Gita it is said that, you know, like Yamanam Bhapin Swanam Bhavam Tajatan Dekalevam Tam Tamaveti Kunti Sratat Bhava Avita. Means in the Kita Shishupala, if you apply this verse, it doesn't work. For the Shishupala, it doesn't work because he was completely opposite to the devotion of the Supreme Lord.
But he meditated on the Lord, Yamanam Bhapin Swanam Bhavam.
But he was meditating Lord's qualities, and that's also unfavorable way, not a favorable way.
So they don't get the same result as the devotees, but they get some good result. Even if the concentration is negative, they get a result. Now normally that won't happen, but with Krishna it will happen. Because if it's attractive form and qualities, they concentrate on him. With Rama it did not happen. With Nrisimhadeva it did not happen. With Hiranyakasipu, they did not concentrate on him. With Krishna it happened because of his exceptional beauty and form. And they could not help but think of him in hatred. But then eventually the hatred disappeared. ultimately. When it was all gone, then Krishna was able to kill them and then get their liberation.
Whatever. So it was like a fraction of a second, this unfavorable mood turned into a favorable mood, a fraction of a second only.
Well, it became, we could say neutral at least. Uh-huh. When it finally became neutral, then Krishna killed him, and then his Sudarshan chakra touched him, and he got prema. He went to the spiritual world.
Now, what about this? It said that Shishupala's Atma merged into the body of Krishna. How to understand this? I mean, what should be the activities of merging in the body of Krishna's body?
Obviously, all the universes merge into Mahavishnu. There's nothing wrong with all universes, along with the jivas, merging into Mahavishnu at the time of Pralaya, and they're actually still have contamination even, and they're all stuck in Mahavishnu. Now, merging in Brahman or merging in the form of the Lord, then they have to be purified of the gunas and karma, etc. And then they merge in Brahman, etc. And they don't come out, then they stay there. In the case of Shishupala, of course, that was a temporary arrangement, and then he got his form in Vaikuntha as a doorkeeper.
So here means merging in the body of Krishna means that having the eternal form.
Of course, he can just merge in physically. They can see like Agasura also merged in the body of the Lord, but then he got a form in the spiritual world. So when it says loya, or enter into, sometimes it's interpreted as they simply meet with the Lord. And then they attain their eternal position as associates of the Lord. So that's also another way of interpreting the merging and whatever in some cases, and you take it like that. But not all the demons get body. They may just merge and get impersonal liberation also.
In the case of Mayavadi, those who like to merge into the body of the Lord, can you say that they also get the same thing, same result, like in Shishupala?
No, but Shishupala got a body, so it was different.
I'm saying from the
Others may just merge. Yeah, it's very similar. So that's why we say, well, liberation not very good, because even the demons get it. If the demon can get liberation and merge in Brahman, so what's so good about it for the Gyani? Why should the devotees strive for something that the demons get? They merge in Brahman.
Brahman only, that is the point of Brahman.
Yeah. Even in the Mayavadis, because they offend the Lord, can't even get that. They fall. They come back to a material body. They have to respect the Lord. But he was concentrating on Krishna. Yeah, but the Mayavadis don't concentrate on Krishna, do anything. They just say, okay, formless Lord, and they reject it, and they don't think about it.
Guru Maharaj, in the translations, we find that Srila Prabhupada is using liberally the words delivered, liberated, and moksha, which almost means the same, and it's very difficult to discriminate between these. How do we understand and discriminate?
Liberation in general can mean two things: liberation and impersonal liberation, or it can also mean going to the spiritual world. Usually moksha or liberation we take as the impersonal, but sometimes it is also used in the general sense of just anyone who's out of the material body, etc. So also those in Vaikuntha are liberated, so it can be taken in both ways. And delivered is more general. It could be either. It could be impersonal liberation, or it could be Vaikuntha also. And just delivered is unspecific.
But in the translation of books, Tamil, they have a guideline saying that moksha can be attained only by Vaishnavas and none else, whereas the liberation cannot be attributed to anybody else than Vaishnavas. The word delivered cannot be attributed to moksha, or we can say that moksha is only attained by Vaishnavas and none else.
One can only get liberation if one accepts the Lord. So they're not real Vaishnavas as such, but an impersonalist who worships the Lord can get liberation. A one who rejects the Lord, then he cannot get liberation. So maybe we can call him a Vaishnava in that sense, but he's mainly an impersonalist, and he worships the Lord in that sense. He's a Vaishnava, but he's not primarily a Vaishnava. It's very secondary. in that sense, only a Vaishnava gets liberation. But Vaishnavas don't want, real Vaishnavas don't want liberation. they avoid liberation.
How to understand this, the character of Pundarika Vasudeva? He was trying to imitate Krishna's all the qualities, all the pastimes. Even he was trying to imitate himself, that is.
Yeah, that shows a real demon. trying to be the Lord himself.
Yeah. But he also got liberation.
Yeah. Because he was imitating the Lord's form. The example is given of the bug that gets trapped by the wasp and gets plugged in the hole, and he's always thinking of the wasp, and he comes out, he's a wasp, or something like that.
Can you say that for that?
No, because he thinks of it, he gets that form. So therefore, Pandraka was always thinking in hatred of the Lord again, and then he got liberation because of that, or Sarupya because of that. That's, of course, in one sense, mercy of the Lord. See, they get that Sarupya, but they do not get the prema that the devotee gets. Like even Putana does not get the prema of a devotee. Even she got a form of a nurse in the spiritual world, which is a type of vatsalya kind of. But it wasn't the prema that a devotee gets, so it is different from what a devotee gets.
Instances or the results of the instances based upon more on Krishna's will, whereas in other avatars it is based upon the rules and regulations and other things. Does it mean to say that Krishna has taken that avatar to prove that his will is the prime thing for anything else?
Well, we can say that mercy is more evident in Krishna than other forms. Huh? But part of it also is the more attractiveness of Krishna. And because of that, then they concentrate on the Lord, and therefore he gives them more mercy because of that. So one is the nature of Krishna himself and his attractive qualities, which causes people to concentrate on him. Demons seem to be offensive to the Lord. How can they be delivered by the Lord? It's in a sense an act of his mercy, but also because of Krishna, then he gives them, they concentrate on him. But even that's so with the other forms. Rani Kasipu fights with Nishrimadev. He gets killed. And then it becomes Ravana in his next lifetime. So he doesn't go to hell, doesn't get punishment at all. So that's one of the qualities of Vishnu. Five qualities that distinguish him above Shiva is that when he kills a demon, the demons don't get any bad birth. And they get some elevation of some sort. Or in the case of Krishna, they get liberated or go to Vaikuntha. Why should we not preach to the offensive people if even demons can be delivered? Well, demons getting delivered, this is a special case when the Lord is present, and especially Krishna, which happens only once in the day of Brahma, for 125 years or so. So that's a very special case. But of course, we can't imitate Krishna and say we're going to deliver all the demons, and you can't kill them either. So I mean, we can't anyway imitate Krishna. Well, if they can keep concentrating all their life on Krishna, and with that, of course, maybe they become devotees in their next lifetime. Who knows? Well, we have to see what is exaggeration and what is actual according to the Purana. And in different places, exaggerations are given. Karmakanda says that sacrifices will take you to deathlessness, immortality, when we know they only take you to Svargaloka, which is temporary. So many statements in scripture you have to question, because we'll find contradictory statements. When it says that Vishnu gives liberation, never contradicted. When it says that Deva doesn't give liberation, then there is some contradiction there, because other statements say only Vishnu gives liberation, etc. So we have to see the context of different Puranas meant for different types of people and how they preach. and then we can come to the proper conclusion, not just take one statement from one Purana or another. Yeah? Of course, those Puranas are meant to give faith to those people in Tamagun, so therefore they follow them and they worship Shiva or whatever, but it's not the highest level. So we should look at the other Puranas, especially the Sattvic Puranas and Bhagavatam, and get the final conclusion.